It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
A new report of mass killings in northeast Nigeria, a fresh appeal for international aid to forestall famine in Somalia. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. Hundreds of people may have been killed in Nigeria in the latest attack on a Nigerian town. Militants said to have attacked the town of Gamboru Ngala near Cameroon. Gunmen set fire to homes and businesses and shot residents as they tried to flee. Meanwhile, the U.S. military has dispatched an assess and advise team to Nigeria in the growing international response to the country's call for aid in the search of nearly 300 schoolgirls kidnapped last month by Boko Haram. Jen Psaki is a U.S. spokesperson.
We're moving swiftly to put in place a team at our embassy in Abuja that can provide military, law enforcement, and information sharing assistance in support of Nigeria's efforts to find and free the girls. Our embassy in Abuja is standing up an interdisciplinary team. This is what we specifically offered to coordinate with the Nigerian government. This morning, our ambassador met with the Nigerian National Security Advisor. AFRICOM will send a team shortly to assess Nigerian needs. Our legal attaché has been in touch with Nigerian police. The FBI stands ready to send additional personnel to provide technical and investigatory assistance, including expertise on hostage negotiations. And USAID is working with partners on what we can do to be ready to provide victims assistance.
Britain, France, and China have also offered their support. Here's reporter Anne Lookin-Dakar.
It's what the families of the more than 250 missing schoolgirls have been pleading for since Boko Haram took the girls on April 14th. This man's sister is still missing.
If rescue operation is somehow difficult for the government, why didn't they invite the other nation? If they can't do it, why don't they invite specialists from the outside? When they come into the nation, they can help.
The abduction of the schoolgirls has been a wake-up call for the country and the world, but not for the people of Borno State. Hundreds of people are killed each month in northeastern Nigeria as a result of the now five-year insurgency by militant Islamist sect Boko Haram. Local authorities say the military is, quote, outmatched and outgunned. Two deadly bombings at a bus depot outside the capital, Abuja, in the past month have underlined the growing threat. Washington-based Africa analyst for the CNA Corporation, Leslie Ann Warner, conducts studies for the U.S. Armed Forces on U.S. military engagement in Africa.
U.S. assistance cannot really control Nigerian government behavior. And so if the Nigerian government doesn't change their approach, then our assistance is going to really have a limited impact.
She says Nigerian authorities must move away from the heavy-handed military response that has fed the insurgency and alienated the population. And look, VOA News.
Nigerian police Wednesday offered a $300,000 reward for information leading to the location and rescue of those students. Oxfam and other aid groups are warning weak and erratic rains, as well as conflict and a lack of international funding, could lead to mass hunger in Somalia. The UN says more than 50,000 children are severely malnourished. Early results show a lead for the ruling African National Congress Party following the country's fifth post-apartheid election. The ANC had about 57% of the South African vote to the opposition Democratic Alliance's 29%, with more than 3 million votes counted. President Jacob Zuma remained upbeat about the pending results.
I'm very happy, and I think the results will be very good.
Despite concerns over the economy and corruption, analysts predict an ANC victory of some 60%, paving the way for Mr. Zuma to be elected to a second five-year term. Final results are due out on Saturday. Most of Libya's main oil ports in the east remain closed after rebels who occupy them announced their opposition to the country's fifth post-Gaddafi prime minister, Ahmed Maitik. A leader of the rebels accused the Muslim Brotherhood and other Islamists in parliament of undermining an agreement to reopen the ports reached under Mr. Maitik's predecessor, Abdul Al-Thani. Rebels were to open four ports. Only two have been handed back to government forces. In Uganda, a court Wednesday began a hearing, a case against two men accused of engaging in homosexual behavior, believed to be the first trial under the country's new anti-gay law that strengthens criminal penalties. Some Western countries opposed the law, have urged its repeal, and reduced aid to Kampala. Zimbabwe's new central bank chief, John Mangudya, warned the country's economy is weakening and the bank doesn't have the tools to fix it. He said the lack of liquidity and its limited circulation remains the biggest challenge for the Zimbabwean economy, and he called on private companies and state institutions to boost exports. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News. Some of the stories heard can be found and read online at our website, voanews.com.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Thursday, May 8th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Hundreds are feared dead in new Boko Haram attack as President Obama joins world leaders in condemning the kidnapping of schoolgirls.
It's a heartbreaking situation, outrageous situation. This may be the event that helps to mobilize the entire international community to finally do something against this horrendous organization.
A northern Nigerian group is grateful for U.S. assistance to finding the abducted schoolgirls. Central African Republic interim president assesses her first 100 days in office. Al-Shabaab targets suspected Kenyan informant. And a new report says Somalia is at risk of relapse despite improvements in recent years.
Somalia is in a long-term crisis, and it's been forgotten a lot in the face of new emergencies. It's really one of the worst places in the world to be a newborn baby or a woman.
Scott Paul is a senior humanitarian advisor for Oxfam. Former Zimbabwe Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai addresses divisions within his MDC party. And a founder member of Swaziland's PUDEMO says the party has no apology for calling for the removal of the current political system. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. People across the world have voiced outrage at the abduction of nearly 300 Nigerian schoolgirls. Now, Nigeria has accepted an offer from the United States and subsequently Britain and France to send in law enforcement and military experts to assist in the investigation. VOA's Ken Bredemeyer explores the U.S. role in finding the missing girls 3 weeks after their abduction.
U.S. President Barack Obama is among world officials condemning the abduction of the Nigerian schoolgirls and Boko Haram, whose name means Western education is a...
It's a heartbreaking situation, outrageous situation. This may be the event that helps to mobilize the entire international community to finally do something against this horrendous organization.
With Nigeria's assent, the U.S. is sending in a variety of military advisors, criminal investigators, and hostage negotiators to help find the girls. On Wednesday, Pentagon spokesman Colonel Steve Warren said a handful of U.S. military advisors, less than 10, is part of the team that within days is headed to the Nigerian capital, Abuja. He said there are no plans, however, for a U.S. military operation.
Their mission there is to simply assess and advise. These personnel will be experts in areas to include communications, logistics, intelligence, all of the functionalities that we believe will be helpful.
A former U.S. ambassador to Nigeria, John Campbell, now a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, voiced skepticism at the extent of the U.S. effort.
I think it is highly unlikely that there would be large numbers of Americans going to Nigeria. Whatever assistance we might provide and might be welcomed by the Nigerian side is likely to be essentially technical.
A former State Department official, Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Johnny Carson, says Nigeria in the past has been reluctant to accept U.S. assistance, believing it can handle its own affairs.
The government's willingness to accept publicly large amounts of assistance makes it look as though its policies in the past have failed, that it is ineffective and weak in dealing with a domestic issue, and that its sovereignty is being infringed because they can't, in fact, do it themselves.
Former Ambassador Campbell says that since 2009, Boko Haram has been involved in deadly attacks on schools and suicide bombings while funding itself with bank robberies. He said the Islamist militants control as much as a third of Nigeria. Ken Bredemeyer, VOA News, Washington.
A group of northern Nigerians living in the United States has expressed gratitude to the U.S. government following its decision to help Nigeria find the schoolgirls kidnapped last month by the Islamic militant group Boko Haram. Sani Babalia, vice president of the Washington, D.C. chapter of the Zomata Association, condemned Nigerian politicians who, he says, are attempting to make political capital out of the schoolgirls' abduction to discredit the Nigerian government in the run-up to next year's general election. Instead, Babalia tells reporter Peter Clotty that Nigerian leaders should unite against Boko Haram militants.
The Monta Association, USA, at the Washington, D.C. chapter is really grateful for the international community who have stepped up to help in bringing the kidnapped girls at Chibok Secondary School back to their parents and community at large. It is unfortunate that, things have been going really so bad in Nigeria now with all these terrorist acts. But we feel the leadership should really, really step up. And when I say leadership, I mean the leadership at all levels should really, really step up to enhance their effort in defeating terrorism.
There are some Nigerians who are saying that opposition politicians in the country are taking advantage of this unfortunate incident to make political capital and to discredit the ruling party or the government ahead of next year's election. What do you make of this?
This is not the time and the place to sort of, play the blame game, so to say, using politics or, even using religion, as it may, for one to score some cheap political gains. It's not helping the nation at all. Consequently, it's not going to help even the person at the long run who would think this might help him or her. This is a national tragedy, and it should be treated so.
There are suggestions that both the federal government and the state government have acted too slowly to attempt to free these abducted school young women, because each day that they have not been found, their chances of being found becomes bleaker.
What I mentioned for the leadership to step up, that includes the leadership to be very responsive in a very timely manner. You cannot expect such a thing of such a magnitude to happen and the leadership being so irresponsive for almost 3 weeks. Now, thanks to the international community, I believe in part that is the reason why both levels of leadership are coming out to, at least for the first time, say something about it.
Sani Babalia is the vice president of the Washington, D.C. chapter of the Zomata Association. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty. The interim president of the Central African Republic says the new cabinet reshuffle that she announced this week will provide a balanced representation of all regions across the country. 100 days into her administration, Samba Panza told VOA French to Africa service she hopes the new cabinet can help improve her government's effectiveness. Samba Panza also hopes the proposed larger UN peacekeeping force will be deployed soon to prevent armed groups from taking advantage of the vacuum. A new report said despite improvements in recent years in Somalia, the country remains in severe crisis. A coalition of more than 28 groups said many Somali communities are one shock away from disaster. VOA's Jody Kapua has the story.
The report, Risk of Relapse Somalia Crisis Update, says better conditions are not the same as success. It describes most aspects of everyday life as falling far below acceptable living standards. The report says nearly 3 million Somalis are in humanitarian crisis, 50,000 children are severely malnourished, and more than 1 million people are displaced. Those figures are actually better than they used to be. But the report says progress should not be measured against minimum standards. Scott Paul is a senior humanitarian advisor for Oxfam, one of the coalition members.
Somalia is in a long-term crisis, and it's been forgotten a lot in the face of new emergencies, in particular emergencies in Syria and South Sudan, Central African Republic. But it's still in a very, very deep crisis. It's really one of the worst places in the world to be a newborn baby or a woman.
Paul says when providing assistance to Somalia, it's important to learn from the past.
We learned in 2011 that responding late to early warnings is a bad idea. 260,000 people died in the famine in 2011, and we're trying to sound the alarm so another terrible emergency doesn't take place again.
While conditions are better than 2011, the Oxfam advisor says it's not enough.
Things have improved marginally over the past couple of years, but most of the country is still experiencing really, really high rates of humanitarian emergency and crisis. Fewer than 1 in 4 people have access to adequate sanitation facilities. In one city in the south, in Kismayo, less than 10% of the entire population has access to adequate facilities. Across the country, about 30% of people have access to clean drinking water.
He says there are a number of reasons why Somalia continues to be in crisis year after year.
It's been a long, long protracted emergency. It's been a consequence of a crisis in governance. It's been conflict. It's been cyclical droughts. And the international community has not done enough to really help Somalia provide the sort of long-term, flexible funding that Somali communities need to build community-level resilience.
The Risk of Relapse report says only 12% of Somalia's humanitarian funding requirements have been met, adding that $822 million is still needed. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today's Thursday, May 8th. Daybreak Africa time, 16 and a half minutes past the hour. Communities in Kenyan coastal towns have been shaken up by the recent killings of 3 men believed to be government informants. As Mohammed Yusuf reports for VOA from the town of Malindi, another battle looms as local terror cells fight to suppress the information provided to Kenyan authorities.
Late Sunday, Mohammed Salim Alian, an alleged informer, was killed by unknown gunmen as he was about to enter his house. He is the third informant killed in less than 6 months in the coastal town of Malindi. Acting Malindi Police Commander Charles Rotate tells VOA an investigation is underway and police have some leads to apprehend the assailants.
So far we are just closing in. We have some information which we are just trying to follow up. Yeah, and I hope soon we shall get them. With the other victims, I cannot comment, but with the latest incident we might get.
The other 2 men killed were Ahmed Bakshwain and Faiz Mohammed. Bakshwain was shot dead in the streets in Malindi by gunmen on a motorcycle. Faiz Mohammed was in his mid-20s when he was beheaded late last year by a group of suspected local Al-Shabaab supporters. In an interview with VOA, Faiz's elder brother Musao Mohammed says his brother was tricked by locals who had known Faiz for years.
Yeye alichukuliwa mtana. Lakini mama yetu alipigwa simu kufika saa.
He says his brother was taken away in the afternoon and the killers called their mother on her mobile to tell her they had killed her son. He says the family went to the scene to ask around and saw the way his brother was beheaded. The family buried Faiz's body without the head. 5 months later, Musao has given up getting his brother's head, which he believes was thrown into the ocean. Some locals have questioned the activities of Faiz, but his family did not see anything suspicious in his life. Musao Mohammed says he only knew his brother as a business person, not as an informant. He says his brother was a fisherman, an Islamic school teacher for some years, and a land agent. He says after the killing, the government said he was working with us, but his family did not know it. Multiple sources tell VOA Faiz at certain point was involved in transporting some youth to join Al-Shabaab. It was through this activity that he was approached by Ahmed Bakshwain to work with the government as an informant. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Malindi.
Former Zimbabwe Prime Minister and leader of the opposition movement for democratic change, Morgan Tsvangirai, says his party will consider boycotting the country's next general election in 2018 if no major reforms are not implemented by the government of President Robert Mugabe to make the election credible. But before Mr. Tsvangirai focuses on the country's next elections, he must first deal with the apparent rift within the MDC. Tsvangirai tells reporter Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe service that he is still an effective and vital leader of his party.
The support is home-based,
And so far, I don't think that I lack the support of Zimbabwe. I think I enjoy the support of Zimbabweans. People know what they see in me and what leadership I have provided. They have confidence in our leadership, and that's all that matters. The international community, we don't hate anyone. We will engage anyone.
Some of your very close allies have also said that they feel that the international community is interfering in your internal politics. Do you share the same views?
I don't have facts to that. I'm also reading those kind of reports in the newspaper. If they are doing that, I think it's wrong. Because at the end of the day, the struggle of the people is defined by the nationals of that country. If you want to give support unconditionally. And that's what I thought for a very long time, that the international community is supporting the democratic struggle in Zimbabwe, not personality.
You have overwhelming support. Do you feel it is time for others in the party to take over by stepping down, since you have been at the helm for 15 years and counting?
But Zulu, if I have overwhelming support, why should I abandon the people? Do you abandon people at the time when they need you most? Or you have to find a process whereby you hand over to the other leader at the appropriate time in a congress? That's what is done.
But has it crossed your mind to pass on the baton stick?
Look, I'm not immortal. I already have thought about what process will have to be involved. I know when I'm going to leave, but I'm not going to leave because people want to push you out. I'm not going to leave because people want to have a hostile takeover without the democratic considerations of the Congress. I think it will be like abandoning ship. And I'm not going to abandon ship because one person thinks that I should step down.
But how free and fair is the party's road to the October Extraordinary Congress?
I want to assure you that everything will be done transparently, democratically. And I will personally supervise the process so that we don't have any residual complaints that may arise as has happened during the primary election.
After your Congress, what is the MDC going to do to ensure a free and fair election come 2018?
Well, I think that the real focus is to have a roadmap to the next elections, which is 2018 or earlier. We don't want a repeat of another rigged election again. And so there are demands for the implementation of reforms that we have been calling for. Information of the ballot, voting procedures, role of the military, NICUV, and all these we experienced during the last election.
Former Zimbabwe Prime Minister, MDC Tea Leader Morgan Tsvangirai was speaking from Harare with Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe Service. A founding member of Swaziland's banned Opposition People's United Democratic Movement, PUDEMO Party, says the party is not apologetic for its call for the removal of the country's current political system. But Umphalana Shangwe says PUDEMO did not call for the overthrow of the monarchy led by King Mswati III, Africa's last absolute monarch. This comes after a Swaziland High Court this week turned down an application for bail by PUDEMO leader Mario Masuku, who is jailed for allegedly calling for the overthrow of the monarchy. The court said Masuku is a flight risk. But PUDEMO founding member Shangwe tells me the judge has not been fair to the PUDEMO leader.
The conduct of the court, especially the judge who was handling the case, a lot to be desired, especially when refusing the bail, whereas the other judge had granted the seven PUDEMO accused yesterday, yet they have been charged under the same law, that is sedition. So now this is very, 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 very confusing and surprising. Why one judge would give bail to certain accused and one other judge refused bail to the president, yet the charges were all the same.
The court said that Mr. Masuku and the others are charged with serious crimes, and there's a possibility that they might flee the country.
You see, Mr. Masuku is an old man. He has a family established in Swaziland. There is no way he could flee the country. And the issue of the seriousness of the charge, it's neither here nor there, because this is just about sedition. You see, you cannot run away for sedition. And two, the others who have been arrested for wearing PUDEMO t-shirts have been given bail. And they were also charged under sedition.
Now, maybe I give you a chance to clarify. What did Mr. Masuku mean when he said he called for the overthrow of the monarchy? Did he mean through democracy or through what means?
You see, James, there is a difference between the overthrow of the monarchy and the overthrow of government. Podemos has not advocated for the overthrow of the monarch, but Podemos has always advocated for a peaceful negotiated settlement to replace the one-party system with a plural and multi-party system. So it is not correct that Masuku called for the overthrow of the monarch, but Masuku called for the overthrow of the system. We have said we want multi-party. We have said we want a constitutional monarch. How can he call for an overthrow of the monarch, yet we demand a constitutional monarch? This is not true, but it is fabricated. He did call for the removal of the present system of government. That we are not apologetic with, but not of the monarch. The problem is that in this country, there is no difference between government and the monarch. If you criticize the monarch, you are criticizing government. If you criticize government, you are criticizing the monarch.
Umpalana Shangwe is a founding member of Swaziland's banned opposition Podemo Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Mbabane. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with volleyball. Tunisia's African champions Esperance challenged Italy's four-time world champions Trentino Diatec at the Men's World Club Volleyball Championships in Belo Horizonte, Brazil, today, Thursday. Meanwhile, Algerian African champions GS Petroliers faced Switzerland's Valero Zurich at the Women's World Club Volleyball Championships in Zurich, Switzerland. Turning to athletics, South Africa's World Student Games 10,000-meter champion Stephen Mukoka has his sights set on the British Commonwealth Games in Glasgow, Scotland in August. Having run a career best of 60 minutes and 37 seconds at the World Half Marathon Championships in Copenhagen, Denmark back in March, Mukoka reckons he has a solid base from where to pursue his goal in 10,000 meters.
And from now on, I mean, after those that phase of trying to do much of endurance because of the half marathon, we are breaking down to some speed work because I'm hoping that my manager can get me something abroad for the track because I wish I can qualify for Commonwealth Games.
On the track, we've seen you very versatile in 5,000 meters, 10,000 meters, 1,500 meters. Where is your focus going to be? Which one, where do you want to focus on and what time are you looking at perhaps achieving this year?
No, I'm going to run 10,000 meters. I mean, it's my special event, but I'm hoping to get maybe 5,000 to sharpen me up for the 10,000 meters. So my basic thing this year is try to get to 10,000 meters where I can be able to make the team. If I do make the team, then I'll be happy because I want to run the 10,000 meters at Commonwealth Games.
All right. And any particular time that you're thinking of or aspiring to achieve?
Being in the team is my main goal. But I know, I mean, there's standard 27:40 is what I have to run. So I'm aiming to be able to run 27:40, but the main important thing this year is the Commonwealth Games, and then if I'll be able to be in part of the team, I'll be happy.
That was South Africa's Stephen Mukoka, the World Student Games 10,000 meter champion, speaking in the South African capital, Tshwane. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a great day. Here's our listener mail for this Thursday morning, May 8th.
I'd like to wish U.S. military experts and their Nigerian counterparts the robust success in a bid to track down the whereabouts of the innocent schoolgirls adopted by the dreaded Boko Haram. Thank you. I'm Bruce Ajio from Makurdi in Benue State of Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. And that's it for this Thursday, May 8th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Ouma, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good Thursday. VOA.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Voice of America's news,
talk and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOANews.com.